We'll try it.
Blog Talk Radio.
Come shine your light, open your heart. Show us your gift that sets you apart. When you believe, then you can see that you are the star of your own destiny.
Hi, and welcome to the Honoring Hour. My name is Lynn, and I'm your host. I'd like to let you know about some upcoming shows that we have. On May 4th, we're going to have Elka Vera. She's an astrologer, and she's going to be talking to us about coaching and also some things that we can do for the springtime that will let us really bring out our potential. So it's going to work with the natural flux in the planet. On May 18th, we're going to have Paul Wong, who is talking with us about Chinese energetics. And Paul is actually going to be doing some healings on the show. So we're really encouraging people to call in and visit with Paul and just get some healings. I've been watching Paul for a while now with the videos that he sends out, and I've talked with him, and he's just an amazing man. So this is a great opportunity for somebody who wants to have some healing work done and doesn't really know anything about it, wants to get a little bit of sample of it. This is a great opportunity for you. Again, that's May 18th. We're also going to be doing a recorded show that's going to be airing in June with Scott Calixteen, and he is a troubadour that makes up songs. You throw out a topic to Scott, and he makes up these wonderful songs. He's a lot of fun. If he's ever come to your area, he's definitely somebody to see. He just keeps you in stitches. He's really an amazing man. So if you're interested in being part of that show, where you can call in and you know, help us with the pre-recording, just send me a message at talkingtoangels@aol.com. You can reach me through the main website, www.thehonoringhour.com, and I'll send you that link because we'd love to have you participate with that as well. Scott's a really fun guy. Today is normally our monthly meditation, but I got contacted by a friend on Facebook that said that we had a wonderful man coming to our area, the Richmond area. I'm in the Fredericksburg, Virginia area, and wanted to know if I would be willing to do a show. And that's the kind of thing that I really put out to Spirit, that I just want things that I'm not familiar with, and just I want to hear from you guys, the listeners, and say, what are you interested in? So I took this opportunity to invite this person to the show. And today's guest is Dr. Michael Myrdad. He's a world-renowned spiritual teacher and healer and author. He's worked as a healer and counselor for 30 years and is the author of the best-selling books, The Seven Initiations of the Spiritual Path, An Introduction to Tantra and Sacred Sexuality, and You're Not Going Crazy, You're Just Waking Up. Michael has facilitated thousands of classes, lectures, and workshops throughout the world on mastery, spirituality, relationships, and healing, and is suitably noted by many authors as the teacher's teacher and a healer's healer. He's been featured as a keynote speaker in the world's largest expos and conferences and has been on radio, television, and various internet programs. His work has been published in several leading magazines, including Whole Self Times, Sedona Journal, and Yoga Journal, as well as the cover feature in Evolve. Dr. Myrdad is respected as one of the finest and most diverse healers of our time and for his ability to share the deepest teachings in a clear and applicable manner. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Great. I'm glad to have you on. And as I just said, you know, I got introduced to you through someone on Facebook that said, hey, we've got this person coming to the area. Would you be interested? So can you tell us a little bit more that may not have been in that bio, a little bit about yourself and how you got started?
Well, I started teaching about 30 years ago, as it did say, but basically I think I've always had an interest, like some people do, but I've always had an interest in spirituality and metaphysics and healing and that sort of thing. And as I got kind of launched into my life that long ago, you know, in terms of coming out of high school and going into what we're going to do with our lives, you know, I just decided, you know, I love this stuff. But at the time, there was really no receptivity or very little. There were no healing centers. There were very, very few yoga centers. I mean, literally a few here and there in the country. There weren't really metaphysical bookstores, and even the New Thought churches didn't really have an open door, per se, at the time for teachers. And so when I got launched out there, you know, to go out and teach you know, I sort of, and this is the case for many of us, we sort of sometimes we're looking for our soul's purpose, which is great when you can find it, but sometimes you actually have to create your soul's purpose. You have to actually kind of create the receptacle, you know, for you to land in that place. So sometimes, like Bill Gates had to do to some degree with the computer industry, I've had to, you know, for myself, there were very few people at that time that were authors. You know, there was certainly Richard Bach and maybe Dan Millman, wonderful guys, wonderful teachers, wonderful authors, but even they weren't out on the road per se. So it's just something that it gradually developed, and it took work to get that to happen, and getting out there, any centers that happened and any or that were available or any bookstores and teaching and conferences gradually developed in the 80s. You know, it started kind of blossoming a bit more, and certainly by the 90s it became very common that people are out touring and teaching, so common that some people were kind of turned off by it because there were a lot of people getting on the bandwagon teaching and claiming to be healers and so forth, that a lot of people actually shut the doors on that and said, you know, we've had too many that weren't really the integrities or the quality we were looking for. And so that created another round of work, having to stay with it and endure and, you know, continue to let the reputation precede me and let people get to know my work and keep it divided from those that kind of fell to the wayside. So it grew, the interest in healing and teaching and Tantra and all these different things that I do. There's times in the country or in the world where that's waned and then it's come back. But what's consistent is that people are definitely steadily growing. The fads themselves and certain kinds of books and topics, they come and go, but there are some steady things that are happening, and consciousness is definitely shifting. Everybody will talk about one thing or another for a few years, and then it'll fade, but consciousness is gradually shifting underneath all the many fads that are percolating at the top. And so my one of my fortes is that I don't have a particular thing to go out and promote. I'm not the guy who's known for this or that, just one thing. I don't have one book that I went out and promoted, like I'm on tour promoting an album, like a rock band or something. My forte is actually the opposite. I teach everything or many things because everything comes together. Everything connects. So I teach on healing. I teach on healing abuse. I teach on healing trauma, but I also teach on healing arts. And then there's relationships. There's intimacy, sacred sexuality. Then there's metaphysics, spirituality, A Course in Miracles, energy work, whatever, you know, ancient civilizations, Atlantis, Lemuria. It's diverse because I've always believed it all connects. And I think people more and more for sure are now coming to understand that, that all the topics connect, all the spirituality connects, all the religions connect on one level. You just have to have the right mind or consciousness or open-mindedness to see the connection between things. So that's sort of been my, you know, sort of my history and my forte, and the topic I noticed in your show is focusing particularly on Tantra and sacred sexuality, and so I've been also, you know, involved with that and teaching on that for a long time. But even on that topic, I don't fit in to some of the Tantra or sacred sexuality teachers out there, because there's traditionally what you call a right-hand path and a left-hand path in Tantra or the sacred arts. And this includes Taoist arts or Tantra arts. There's more than one culture that has what you consider like a sacred sexual teaching or concept or school of thought. And when it comes to this one, there's considered a right and left-hand path. The right-hand path is more like, you know, like the monks and the religion practicing Tantra, like Hinduism or Buddhism. It's a very serious practice, very religious practice, very devout practice, and mostly celibate, ironically, even though it's called Tantra. The left-hand path is the one you hear mostly about in the Western world. A lot more, you know, you hear somebody write a book on Tantra, you hear a Tantra teacher doing a lecture. Usually it's more involved with left-hand path, and left-hand path is, you know, just like we have more McDonald's and whatnot here in the Western world than in the East, it's because we like the fast food and stimulus. So in the Western world, left-hand path Tantra, which is much more stimulus-oriented, stimulation or sexual-oriented. It's a lot more, literally, it's practitioners that are being sexual with one another. Sometimes that's what they're teaching even in their workshops and such, and I'm not saying it's good or bad, I'm just saying it's considered left-hand path. And the irony, just to get the kind of the deeper concepts behind Tantra out of the way, is that one of those paths is saying, look, everything in the universe is about union. That's what the word yoga means. Everything, A Course in Miracles, yoga, they're all teaching the same thing. They're saying, we believe we're separate. That is the only problem in the universe, although it takes on many symptoms. And the only solution is oneness or reunification, whether it's the Judean concept of the Lord thy God is one, or if it's the Hindu concept of the universe is one. You know, it's the oneness. Return to oneness is the only solution to what seems to be a problem. And A Course in Miracles teaches that in its way, and saying we believe we're separate, and the only solution is for us to remember our oneness with God, with ourselves, and with each other. And so that's what union is. And so in the Tantra schools of thought, they're saying, the right-hand path are saying, that union that we all long for should be done in a meditation. And so you're unifying all aspects of yourself, including your male and female, within only your mind and in your meditation. Well, the left-hand path says, well, that's all fine and dandy, but we want to actually practice it physically, not just do it within our mind. So they literally get men and women and join physically, that is to say sexually at times, and that's their union. You see, one's just taking it what's called literal, and one uses it as an allegory. But both are doing the same thing, but one literally and one allegorically. But the idea is that Tantra means joining or unification or weaving that which seems separate back together. So ironically, you can be a Course in Miracles student and a Tantra student at the same time, and they're not contradicting, as long as you have a deep enough mind to understand the connection is a similarity, because in their themes, they're the same. Only in the external actions or manifestations, just like religions, only in the external do they look very apparent and unreconcilable. So that's sort of where I come from, and so I teach a middle path of Tantra, which is to understand that in reality you can only really join within your mind. If you don't get it there, that it's not going to happen no matter how many people you attempt to join with externally. If you don't understand it internally, you're never going to succeed. So I teach a right-hand premise and a left-hand acceptance, a kind of balance between the two. And under the umbrella, I call all of these sacred sexuality. So, you know, to keep it palatable to your listeners and to most listeners in any show, most people aren't going to want to know about the historic pieces of Tantra and the details. It's more about, and I enjoy talking about the practical pieces in our daily lives, our daily relationships. You know, so if you have particular thoughts reflecting your own listeners, then it's great to go there. But that's my idea is, you know, really to reflect this is, how do we increase intimacy in our homes? Where are the problems of intimacy coming from? And, you know, how do we solve those issues? And, yes, using, you know, Tantra and so forth, or sacred sexuality, but really all these concepts are the same. How do we heal, and healing is a key piece, how do we heal that which isn't working well in our lives, in our minds, in our hearts, in our souls, but also in our intimacies? Where do those problems come from, and what can we do about them?
So what is the answer to that question? Where do you start with that in healing? Like let's say that you've got a married couple, and there's just so much divorce today.
Yeah.
A lot of people, what I've seen personally is a lot of people are trying to find themselves, and one of the quickest ways of redefining yourself is to separate. And it's just so easy. It's such a readily available thing in our society. So, and then I'm also seeing, you know, as they've been separated, that maybe that's not what they wanted to do. It wasn't so much about the marriage. It was more about themselves. So what is,
that's right.
How do you start healing?
Well, the first thing is we have to have healthy, fulfilling relationships. Honestly, the word is so key. To have fulfilling relationships in our lives, then it's like Sufi teachings are that you can only have three relationships, and they are with God, yourself, and others. That's it. There's really nothing else. It's God, self, and others. And A Course in Miracles would explain that you have to have them in that order. First, God, meaning you have to have some sort of spiritual practice to be a healthy person. If you have no spiritual practice, then you're out of touch with the source of love, healing, forgiveness, joy, oneness, or whatever else that makes you a really great person inside. Therefore, you'd never meet the standards of what another healthy person out there would be looking for. You must have some sort of spiritual practice. I don't mean hypocritical type, where you say, I go to church on Sunday and then I don't live any of it. I read all the books in the New Age, but I don't practice any of them. I'm talking about some authentic, practiced, you know, piece of spirituality. So this is where we're, you know, learning to have some sort of prayer meditation practice, just putting it in like simplistic terms for now. You must have some sort of spiritual connection practice, healing, a place to be in your silence and recharge. Secondly, you have to have a relationship with yourself, which means you know how to access your stuff. You know how to do some self-healing. See, because if you don't have any self-inventory, like you find in counseling or 12-step programs or some sort of program that makes you look at yourself, look at your vulnerabilities, look at where your weaknesses are, where your issues come from. If you don't have any way of accessing your stuff, bottom line is you're going to end up acting it out or taking it out on others. That's it. It's going to go somewhere. So if you don't have a healthy relationship with yourself, you can't have one with somebody else. So you must have not only the spiritual connection relationship, but one with yourself where you get to know yourself, not just the constant self-healing, but also developing boundaries, like based on who you are spiritually, which comes from the first relationship. In the second relationship with yourself, you also have to develop healthy boundaries, meaning who are you and therefore what works for you and what doesn't work for you. So you have to, if you don't have healthy boundaries, technically you are going to be prone to the number one biggest addiction on planet Earth, which is not alcoholism or drugs, it's codependent relationships. And codependent relationships are not just the kind where, you know, where I love you too much, I'm just attached to you or addicted to you. No, codependence can be either the person who loves suppressing others and, you know, controlling others. It's the one that's overly aggressive controlling relationships, as well as the one that's constantly controlled. So one is just overly harsh boundaries, meaning they're lacking boundaries, so they overcompensate by controlling others, or they're lacking boundaries, so they overcompensate by giving to others. In either case, it's a lack of boundaries, and we're either abusing others or letting them abuse you, and either way, it's not healthy. So without a healthy spiritual self and without a healthy personal self, you're going to be an unhealthy person for others. But with those intact, we then go to the third relationship. Now I approach you instead of being somebody who's missing pieces inside of myself, missing myself and or spirit God connection. Then I would only be able to go to you with emptiness inside, holes within my soul. And I need you to either be the blame for those problems, which are people we don't like in our lives, or you're the person who I'm going to credit with being the solution. Hey, if you just love me, I'll feel better. If you just give me what I want, I'll feel better. And that's, you know, definitely codependent behavior. And if you're healthy, however, you're not going to take that out on other people. You're going to say, I don't actually need anything from you. I'm here to share life with you, time with you, this moment with you, whether it's in lovemaking or a lifelong relationship. I'm here to bring to you, this is me. And it's not a promise that I'm perfect, but I can promise you that I work on myself spiritually and that when stuff arises, I will go within me first to deal with it rather than vent it on you. And I also know that you're not the source of my love. It's spirit, it's God and myself. That's where love resides. I'm here to share that love with you. So we sort of take the burden off other people. And some of the responsible actions involved with having a healthy relationship with others is not only the relationship with God and yourself has to be somewhat intact, not perfect, but somewhat intact. But now in my relationship with others, It involves healthy communication, responsible, mature communication, communicating my needs, communicating my boundaries, communicating what works for me, what doesn't work for me. That's really healthy communication. And also, you know, responsible communication, which means I can only speak about me. I can't tell you. You make me feel this. You're a blankety blank, which constantly is happening in relationships. So is sort of in context of your question, yes, relationships split up constantly because people don't have a relationship with spirit and or with themselves and or when they even try with others, they're not practicing healthy communication. And second to communication, another item is intimacy. And so they fail healthy intimacy. So now having named those half dozen issues that we have to kind of have intact before we can have fulfilling relationships, imagine, you know, so recapping, it's some prayer and meditation, it's having some sort of self-healing techniques for you and some healthy boundary development, that's two more things, and with others. It's communication and intimacy. So that half dozen items intact makes us really have fulfilling relationships. Now, a lack of that's clearly going to result in what we see today. Now, in our parents' generation or our parents' parents and parents' parents, the old days, what people did was they had these problems, and they'll be the first to tell you. We had those problems, too. We didn't get divorced. You're right. Instead, they went numb. They just became complacent. They don't often talk to each other. You'll know lots of them. If you look around you, lots of couples that have been together for 50 years, and they don't even talk to each other. They stopped making love about 40 years ago. So there's communication problems. There's intimacy problems. Even if they have some sort of spiritual path, that just means they go to church on Sunday. They're still the same kinds of people. They're still often miserable people, and they don't know what to do about it. So they went numb, they became complacent, and they call that marriage, the good old, fashion way. So naturally in the 60s, that started becoming revolutionized. People started saying no. But then they went overboard. Now, anytime you sneeze wrong, I'm out of here, and we divorce. So that became rampant, which is typical of humans to go opposite extremes. Neither one of those is going to help you because it's still you. If you're not different than you were yesterday, how can you expect a different today? And if you're not different today, how are you going to expect a different tomorrow? And obviously in relationships, it's the same thing. So a lot of people are very scared, very desperate. What do I do? How do I create a healthy relationship if I want one? Which clearly you should. But if you want to have an intimate partnership, let's say, all your relationships you should long to make healthy and fulfilling. But in your partnerships, if you choose to go there, then you need these pieces intact. It might sound like an inconvenience. It might sound like work. But here's the scoop. If you do this and you spend a little time working on these things, you develop healthier and better, more fulfilling relationships. You see instantly, whether it's a year, 2 years, 3 years later, it's really worth it. If you don't, and you'd rather just jump into them and keep jumping into them and try the quick food, the fast food route, you're going to keep getting the same thing. Now, lifetimes later, you're still miserable in your relationships. You're still reincarnating with the same people you didn't like five lifetimes ago, and you're going to tell me that working on yourself for a few years is an inconvenience to create fulfilling relationships. No way. I mean, it saves you years of misery to do some responsible self-healing. And if an animal is sick, if a dog is sick, it fasts. It doesn't keep eating. So people, when your relationships are sick, people should be fasting from relationships, taking a break, doing their self-healing, doing their God connection, healing themselves, becoming different people, becoming different enough to where next time you emerge into the world of relationship, you should be different, hopefully significantly different. And the more different you are, that is to say, the more spiritual you are and the more healed you are, the more likelihood of creating healthier people, including partnerships. So to me, this is a practical and a very responsible path. And that last category, though, was intimacy. And it's saved for last for a reason, because there's so much that needs to be intact or at least being developed in our lives before we should be expecting intimacy to be healthy. Lots of people, however, look at your women's magazines on the checkout stands at supermarkets, constantly telling women what they should have in their homes and how to spice up your life and your relationship, how to improve your sex. When you don't like the person at home, you're not going to spice up your sex. You can try, and then you'll go, wow, this was interesting, for about a week. You can get dressed up in cool outfits. You can, try out the different tactics. You can make a sex night for each other, special, and send the kids off to a sitter. And you can do all kinds of cool things. And big deal, it's not going to last if you don't like each other. You have to have some internal shifting. And, constantly I'm working with people that are, coming to see me as a psychic or as a reader or as a healer, depending on what they're coming to me for. But a lot of people come to me, and clearly relationships come up frequently. And a lot of times they don't know what direction to go because they're saying, okay. I mean, the actions that they're experiencing are diverse. Some of them are saying, I'm just not doing relationships. I just gave up. Other people are saying, I'm married, but we're just numb. I don't know where to go. Others are saying, I'm married and I'm having an affair. And the affair is wonderful. and the marriage is terrible. And they have all, everybody's got these different perspectives. And I'm saying to folks, look, you know, I'm not going to judge somebody for having an affair. But the bottom line is, if you're having one and you like some of that stimulus, of course it's tempting. You know, just like having fast food is tempting, more so than having to have a go home and cook for several minutes or an hour or whatever it is. Of course, it always seems better. Stimulus, all that's what it is. It's stimulus. Stimulus always feels better. And I'm not wronging somebody for having an affair. I'm saying you're not healing by having it. You're if you took that same person and had to live with them every day, raise kids with them every day and do the same things every day, they would get pretty boring to you too. We have to look at ourselves and heal ourselves. Now, ideally, you and I would enter a relationship with enough healthiness, we wouldn't lose the passion. But that's in a perfect world. However, what if? Okay, so you have people that are going into a relationship. Go in well. Go in fully equipped, mind, body, soul, and sensualities. That's a great, great idea. Then there's people that are in a relationship. So now you can be developing those things for the day you do. The worst case scenario, though, are people, it isn't the people not in them, and it isn't the people that are going into relationships. It's the people that are already in them and don't know what to do about them. Because once you're in it, it's a bit harder to sort things out than prior. You know, we didn't do our healing prior. Now we're in the hornet's nest. Now what do we do? Now I'm bored of you. Now I'm tired of you. Now one of us has had an affair and doesn't trust the other. Now, or, you know, the other doesn't trust them. Or now we've gotten complacent. Now we've raised kids and had differing ideas and argued, and we've worn down each other. That's the hardest one of all to deal with. And all I can say is, you know, see the right people, see the right counselors, do the right things to work on yourself, and hopefully your partner joins you in that process. Whether they do or don't, when the dust settles, you'll either be able to get that back, you'll either be able to rekindle that, or you will not, and you must be honest. If you cannot or do not get it back, do not leave with hate or hurt. Leave knowing you've done the best you could. Leave with as much love and respect for each other as you can, but do leave if it's hopeless. Do move on as long as you know you've tried. But definitely it's worth a try, unless there's overt abuse going on. Then, of course, no, that's it. Boundary time, done. But when there's just a complacence, you know, we can try to communicate, we can try to talk. And the bottom line is, when all is said and done, your very attempts to be mature and communicate, even if you still have to say goodbye, every one of those attempts to be a healthier, more loving, tolerant person, to communicate and all that, will automatically make you a better soul. Even if you didn't pull off resurrecting that relationship, you're still a better soul for it. So hopefully that all made sense.
Right, it does. And we have a listener who's made a couple of comments that I want to say. Before we go, time is flying by. I've just been amazed at how quickly this time is going. So I want to mention that your website is grailproductions.com, and you can also link to his website from the guest page on the Honoring Hour. After today, it will be on the archives page. Definitely go there and check it out. You're going to be in Richmond, Virginia this weekend. Michael, can you just tell us real quickly where you're going to be and what you're going to be doing?
If I only knew. Well, let me say first, my website is Grail, like the Holy Grail, G-R-A-I-L, productions.com. So that's the first key. And they can pretty much find my itinerary is on there, everything I'm doing for the year, the next year I'm booked up, and so you can pretty much find me. It also mentions conferences I'm speaking at, like the Universal Lightworkers Conference. They have their own website as well, universallightworkers.com. But I'm speaking there in June. I also do sacred sites trips once or so a year. This year we're doing Sedona and the Southwest, so you can find out more about that there as well. And so you can reach my office and, you know, go from there. I'm looking at my schedule here as we speak, and I'm doing the intro to Tantra and sacred sexuality, and that's, the first day. That's, I guess, on the 17th, Saturday. And there's the contact phone numbers, which include 830-265-0197 or 804-564-3564. And again, you can access this on my website. I'm also doing something at the Unity Church of Bonaire on Sunday the 2nd, and I'll be doing a workshop after that. But I'll be actually speaking at their Sunday service at 11 o'clock, 9 and 11 actually, and then a workshop in the afternoon called Understanding the Purpose of Life's Test. So that's going on at Unity Church, Christ Church of Bon Air. And then an evening with Dr. Michael Murdad is going on. That's kind of an open-ended evening focusing on miracle consciousness or whatever else happens to be going on in people's lives. It's kind of an open-ended thing, and that's on Monday, May 3rd at the same Unity Christ Church of Bon Air.
Okay.
So that's pretty much the most of what I'm doing in the area that I know of, at least that I can see on my schedule. But people can get a little bit better acquainted with the details of the addresses and the locations and, you know, whatever, if they go to the website.
Right. And you're in a lot of areas. So I know that we have a lot of listeners that are not in the Virginia area, which is great. So please do visit his website because his itinerary is there. Now, we have someone on here. The first comment was that it's hard to be non-codependent, as you describe it, when many of us have been raised to be nice and defer to others or to not be selfish. And then later, as you were talking, the person put, so how or where do you develop a healthy relationship when you are in the middle of it?
Yeah, that's the last thing we were talking about. When you're in the middle of it, it is more difficult, but you have to have some support systems, whether it's your counselor. And whenever you get a counselor, let me say this, make sure you get a progressive counselor. Do not get somebody that's just, and no offense to the others, because there's a place and time for everything and everybody, but don't get somebody who's just going to sit there and kind of chat and ask you how your week was, and they make notes and then say goodbye when the hour's up. Get somebody that challenges you and makes you work on yourself. They give you homework and get you to go communicate with your partners and get you to look at yourself and journal about yourself and heal and dismantle the other, you know, any unhealthy parts to yourself. But if I hear your question correctly and understand it correctly, yeah, when you're in it, well, first one of the parts was the codependence. Yes, yes, that's true. People do encourage that sort of behavior. That's why in my book, You're Not Going Crazy, You're Just Waking Up, I'm partly saying there that even in that title, that people will make you think you're going crazy when you start waking up and question their realities, the realities that are keeping them miserable, the realities that are keeping the whole world in a kind of a trance of codependence. Now, I'm not talking about codependence meaning love and respect for people is a codependence. No, I'm saying being controlled by anything outside of your own heart and soul, the thing in you, that everybody should be living by a mantra called love and self-worth. You should think it, feel it. It should be reverberating through your consciousness in every cell. You should only eat foods that resonate with love and self-worth rather than tell people what diets are good and bad. You should only be dating people that resonate with love and self-worth rather than people that are abusive or too passive for your liking. We should only have jobs that resonate with love and self-worth. If people just had that compass called love and self-worth intact in their heart and soul, and by the way, what is love and self-worth? Technically synonymous with God. So really, you're letting spirit be your compass. But if you let love and self-worth be your compass, it'll guide you. It'll guide you away from things you would have done that otherwise are hurtful, and it'll guide you towards the things that are technically very helpful to you. And if people follow that, if we look at our lives right now, just looking back the last year of our lives right now, this moment, let alone 10 years, I'll bet anybody could sit, and if they use that compass, that little test, that litmus test, if I ask what resonates with love and self-worth, I'll bet you everybody that's listening to the show would be able to make a list of things that they have done or chosen that did not resonate with love and self-worth. And had they practiced, had they used that as their criteria, they would not have done those things. And before, they would not be reaping the, you know, unfortunate results from having made that decision. Now, having said all that, yes, when you're in the middle of it, to answer the second part of the question, when you're in the middle of it, we talked about that a moment ago, and you do have some decisions to make. To thine own self be true. Now, I am not one that says, I'm empowering you. Hey, everybody out there, if your partner annoys you, just, you know, get rid of them because the universe wants you to have some perfect partner out there. That's a sales pitch, and it enables your weaknesses and so forth. You're better off instead owning your own part. I'm not saying you're wrong or bad. I'm saying start by looking at how you got into this, what parts of you got you there. And it's typically going to be by allowing things that you knew were not right for you. But then why did you do it? Well, because you were too afraid to be alone. Okay, well, so it's not just your partner's fault, is it? You were afraid to be alone, so you bargained yourself away and you allowed the relationship to be created. You brought them in for the wrong reason sometimes. Sometimes we're in relationships because we use each other. They wanted somebody that looked pretty, and you wanted somebody to pay the bills or whatever. You know, we use each other. We're not being honest, but as we learn to be honest, as scary as it can be, all of a sudden we're becoming empowered. But we look at how we got there, and a counselor can help you, and sometimes healers can help you. But, you know, use the support systems to help you look at what's going on. And it's not just you. Of course your partner contributed some. So and every situation is different, every circumstance, every relationship. So I'm having to give a sort of a blanket answer for everybody, which may not fit everything and everybody and every situation. But I suggest you give it a shot to say to your partner, if you know that there's any hope at all, that is, I suggest you say to your partner, look, and always say something that accentuates the positives. Start off with how much you appreciate them in some way. And if you can't think of any possible way, then why are you there? But if you can think of something like, you know, I really appreciate the way you've handled the kids over the years. I really appreciate the support you've given me financially, whatever it is, something positive. Let them know you appreciate that because you should appreciate it. And I really like such and such about this relationship, but I'd really like to add to that. I really like, it sounds exciting. Like you're not saying, listen, you don't start your conversations with your partner by saying, listen, we have to talk. You know, that's very serious and it's not going to do anything but cause defenses. And you don't attack them and say, look, I'm really spiritual and you're not. I need you to change. That's not going to go over well. Try accentuating the positives and asking them, like you're inviting them to join you in something. Now, I don't mean they have to go to the same church or the same workshop. I'm talking about joining you in life. Like, would you be interested in working on some communication skills? Could we go to a couples counselor? Try these things out. And my point is, in the end, if all you run into are dead ends and they're not willing to do anything, you probably have an answer that you need to consider there. You probably have a something important being shown you right there that it may be hopeless. You still might say, I can still pull it off and stay anyway. That's great if you have the wherewithal. But you might have your answer there. But if they're willing to try some things, great. At least you've put it out there and they're saying yes, so you give it a shot.
Right. And I have to say, I actually went through that personally. And my husband and I were in a really strained marriage, and we wound up separating for a little bit. And I had started to do some inner work, but that when we separated is when I really started to go deep. And I made an inventory of what I wanted and realized that a lot of what I was giving up in the marriage was things that I truly wanted. Like, you know, that by letting that marriage go, I was going to be trying to replace what we have. So while I wasn't having a good – we did not have a good rapport between us, and I continued to do my self-work, and I had to look for something that I appreciated in him. And at that time, the only thing I could really find was he's a wonderful giving person. In my perception, he was wonderful in giving to everybody else. Like, he's just a great friend. He's a great stranger.
Right.
So I started focusing on that as, like, his positive characteristic, and it's taken, you know, from the point where it really started to shift until now, it's been 6 years, but our relationship has really morphed. The thing that's changed the most for me is me. Like, I just have really, I did a lot of self-inventory, and I stopped putting blame on him. I stopped taking blame from him. And it wasn't about what he was going through. It was about what I was going through. And it caused a shift in him as well. And we're still working it. It's not like, you know, things are picture perfect, but I found that I had to go within me first and then just learn to appreciate the things about him. And it could have gone either way. I mean, we could have continued to separate, but we had history, we had children. And I thought, why go start this over again and have the same mess come up in a new relationship when we do have a genuine love for each other? Might as well give it some go here. So it's not easy, but it's
not
possible.
That's why I said, as long as you feel that there's something there to work on, and if there's not, I mean, you can do some inventory and you can talk about it, but something should be done. That's the bottom line is, if you're not happy today in anything, job or whatever it happens to be, how will tomorrow be different? I mean, why are you expecting that to be different? And if you've been married, let's say you've had difficulties for 5 years or a job you haven't liked for 8 years, 8 more years is coming up anytime now, because if you don't do something different today, you're going to have the same thing. That's a really rude awakening, you know, big rude awakening for many of us. We don't realize. For some reason, we're just like, well, yeah, I'll get around to that. Or, yeah, I'm going to look into that. Or, well, I'm just thinking it'll get better. If it isn't, then it won't get better if it isn't already. So when people are sitting around in a very disempowered and non-responsible state of life, expecting things to get different, and they will not. You've got to get involved. You're a co-creator on this planet and in this universe. You've got to get involved. And as you said, you know, you made some changes within yourself. And the truth is, one change within you is equal to several changes you can get out of somebody else. Just one major change within us is equal to many that you could get another, your partner, for example, to make. Getting them to make changes helps temporarily, might make you feel a little better, but major changes within us changes our whole perspective, our whole viewpoint. It releases tension and judgment and so forth. And what's really cool is the changes within us usually does reflect in as changes in other people, but changes in other people don't usually cause a change within us. So if we've got something going wrong inside, we're going to find a way to vent that and act that out on other people. Even if we get person A to behave a certain way, your issues are not gone. You know, you can even force your children to behave. That doesn't mean that they're not harboring any old issues about having watched a lot of fights between their mom and dad or divorce or any other trauma they might have experienced. You know, pushing these things down, denying, minimizing these issues, you're going to absolutely get nowhere. You might even end up worse off by denying all the things that have gone on. You're far better. Everybody's far better off, you know, dealing with these issues and actually looking at what's going on. And it may seem inconvenient and uncomfortable to have to deal with it, to talk about it, but oh my goodness, the difference when you've done your work, the difference is incredible.
So we have another question. When you're complacent in a relationship, so the relationship isn't bad, how do you move to the next level when it's just complacent?
You're saying when there's a complacency but not problems?
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess to me sometimes complacency can be a problem if there's not more there, but they're asking how do you move to a next level from complacency, from the place.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I gotcha. You're right. Yeah, absolutely, complacency is a problem, but I'm saying that when there's not overt traumas and dramas going on and there's just some complacency, yeah, that's just as big a problem as having overt problems. And how do you move on to the next stages, the next steps? Well, typically, when you take the steps and measures to work on yourself, your issues, what triggered you, why were you triggered, what brought this on, what brought this up, and as well as working on communication, you know, as well as communicating with your partner what's working, not working, and implementing your boundaries. So coming out of the mire, let's say, coming out of the muck in a relationship of any kind, just like emerging from a job that hasn't been your soul's purpose. Coming out of it, first, definitely, as I said, work on developing yourself and your spirituality. And the next steps include asking for guidance towards a better life. Also, practice visualizing, believe it or not, visualizing that different life. Don't just sit around and visualize. Get connected and have prayer time and spirituality time. Be vulnerable spiritually and open up and ask for guidance. Then also spend time visualizing that new life, a few minutes a day if you can, morning and night preferably when you first wake and just before sleep. But then your actions also have to match, which means when you say to yourself, well, what are my next steps? Well, anything that resonates with love and self-worth is a next step. So start, whether that, for some people that means getting massages, going to a counselor, going to do yoga. It's taking care of their health and body. Other people, it's not as much a body issue because maybe they already do that as much as they need to really be working with a counselor. Another person, it might be a life coach. So what I'm saying is that you have to empty your cup, your relationship, your job, and things that don't work for you. The toxins have to be poured out. The old ways, including codependent behavior, and I don't care who tells you what to do. Well, our religion doesn't divorce. Our philosophy doesn't do this. Our race this. Our gender that. Don't buy any of those stories. To thine own self be true. God and only God should be your guide. You and God decide what's right for you. And when I say God, I don't mean some abstract thing out there. God is in your center of your being. It's called love and self-worth. That's what God is. It's peace and it's joy. Anytime you act out of alignment or congruence with peace and joy, you are doing against God's will, to put it on that terminology. Anytime you're acting in alignment with peace and joy and love, the greater good for the greater number of people, you're probably doing God's will, so you're probably doing what's right. But you have to make your actions match that. Call that in regularly. Envision that in your life. Literally, in details, envision yourself at a job that's right for you. If you want to visualize indoors jobs, do it. Outdoors jobs, do it. If you want to visualize partnerships that are reciprocal and peaceful and loving and passionate, envision it. We don't have to know whether it's your current partner or not. Just envision that it's so. Envision your children with a peaceful face and they seem well-adjusted and healthy and feel like they just know what direction they're going. See that in your mind. That's what, you know, it means to be a co-creator. It's first in the consciousness, but your actions have to match. So you don't just sit around and pray for peace and then act conflicting. You don't just, you know, stand around or sit around and visualize wonderful things in the world and act completely out of alignment with that. You must participate. So getting counseling is probably congruent for most people with love and self-worth. Getting body work and healing and getting some old junk out of your body and its nervous system is probably good. Doing yoga is probably you're going to probably find that that's in alignment with your greater good. But everybody's got to check in and ask, what are my next steps? And you can bet that arguing with your partner isn't going to help. You have to practice having better tact, better communication skills, not using words like you. Talk about yourself instead. Here's where I'm at. Here's how I feel. Rather than you always, you never, ... and offend people and cause defenses. Don't do that to your children. Don't do it to your boss. Don't do it to your employees. It doesn't help. Tactful, love-based communication. I don't know about you. I don't know what you're doing. I only know about me. And here's where I'm at. I'm feeling like you and I haven't been connecting lately. Now, you can't tell me I'm wrong. I just feel this way. That's tactful. I can't say, you never talk to me. That's not appropriate. You never listen to me. That's not appropriate. How can you say that? You're not them, and you can't use the word never very accurately or successfully. Practice instead, I just feel like we're not connecting lately. That's true. And they can try to make you wrong, and all you can say is, well, I don't know about that. All I know is this is how I feel. See, and that's tactful, and that's loving, and you're more likely to get your thoughts and feelings across when you use love first, tact second, and then appropriate wording third.
Well, that kind of answers the next question I had for you. I was going to ask if you had any special words of wisdom that you offer to young people that are really embarking on serious relationships for the first time. You know, maybe they're young, you know, they're older teens or in their young 20s. That was really good advice. Is there anything else that you talk to them about? Maybe they don't have a pattern of poor intimate relationships.
Despite the age, they still are in the same position where they may be in relationships. They may be fasting from relationships, or they may be, you know, just starting a relationship. It depends where they're at. But I would definitely, you know, in a way, it's a funny thing because in a way, some of these concepts could be premature for some people based on their actual psychological development. If you tell a 17-year-old you need to have a relationship with God, self, and others, and about tact and codependence and so forth. Well, if you tell a 16 or 17-year-old, they might hear pieces of that, but in a way they almost, and I say almost, they almost have to try out those things like crushes and first loves and getting all devastated when they break up with you, you know, playing all these silly games. In a way it's part of the human experience. Does it have to be? No. But we can breed that out of us by just passing down our wisdom to earlier and earlier and earlier generations, and eventually it'll dissipate because it'll become more common to be healthy than it is more common to be unhealthy. That's going to take time, and it's going to be a shift in human consciousness for sure to get people to go that route. But again, to tell 20-year-olds, to tell early 20, mid-20s, whatever, people starting relationships, and some of their first young adult serious relationships or marriages, yeah, I would say, look, you're not going to be able to do this on your own. You might think so, but you might as well now get healthy. Get committed to communicating and look at Anything that's come from your past, and I'm saying this to 20-something-year-olds, but 80-something-year-olds, anything that's not healed in the past will percolate up and destroy the present. It's going to have to, because it isn't gone. It isn't dead like you think because of time. It's there. It's sitting there. It's going to eventually percolate up. So I advise that you get used to working on those old issues. And now especially, if you're in your early 20s, my goodness, what misery you'll save yourself if now you learn to get healthy. I mean, my goodness, your communication skills, everything will be different. And you can use examples like for them to look at older adult relationships around them that might not have been healthy, and they'll see the pretty obvious mirror that isn't a great way to go. And so they might be encouraged to try a different route. Some of this is still going to be a learning curve. There's no doubt, because of the psychological development that's got to happen, and sometimes life experience. But you can do your best to convey through examples, what doesn't work, what does work, and they may get it. That's all you can do is give it a try. Most of all, be a good example.
Right. So what do you say to people who come, and you may not draw these people, but if the primary relationship is with God or whatever their higher power, however they reference that, what do you say to people that may not have that reference in their life? I mean, how do they join with that? Because it really can apply across the board. I mean, somebody with a scientific belief can have a very deep sense of spirituality, but what about for somebody that's lost? How do they find that?
Well, I think that's a great question, because just to say that you have to have a relationship with spirit could sound like it excludes any potential of happiness with people that aren't following any kind of spiritual path. And I got to say, first, that's partly correct. You cannot have much success if you don't have a spiritual connection. So whatever your reason, you're brought up this way or that way, you're an atheist this way or that way, traumas and hurts have made you that way, past lives have made you that way, or you're a scientist and that makes you that way. Whatever your reason, if you don't have a belief and a connection with spirit, you're going to fail complete fulfillment. Now, you can have shades of fulfillment here and there, but they'll only be supplements. They won't be the real thing. However, ironically, that doesn't mean you have to belong to a religion. It doesn't mean you have to even call, because I have clients that are people on the street sometimes. I'm called to deal with a situation. Somebody could be just sitting next to me on an airplane, and they bring up something in their life that's going on, and all of a sudden I'm in the middle of doing a session with them. You know, here I was minding my own business, now I'm working with them. You don't have to use the word God or spirit. So this is the great part, that spirit is synonymous with love, self-respect, self-worth, joy. So if I'm working with somebody and I sense, or they tell me that they're not really into spirituality, I say, okay, no big deal. I brush it off. I don't make it a big deal. I don't shame them or wrong them. I say, let's pick a word that's right for you. If I'm talking to a 15-year-old whose parents might have different spiritual beliefs than me or none at all, I'm not going to say, well, I'm sorry, I can't help you. That would be like behaving like a fundamental Christian or whatever other religion. Instead, I say, well, it's a 15-year-old. It could be a 5-year-old. So it's too heavy to go, well, call spirit in. You know, they're going to, what does that mean? Give them a word that they can identify with that is synonymous with spirit, such as peace. So you could take a 5-year-old and you can say, let's concentrate on happiness. The word happiness, because a 5-year-old kind of knows what happiness is. You and I would know that happiness is really kind of a facet of God consciousness. But we don't want to go into God consciousness. We would say to that person, atheist or whatever they are out there in the world or too young to understand, you could say, let's concentrate on the word love or joy. And if we're real young, maybe we would say happiness. They can wrap their mind around that. So you say to a person of that nature, think about that word, peace, happiness, or whatever it is, and then you can teach them how to just concentrate on that for a minute so they can sort of fill up with it. Almost like it's a they even use techniques like that in hospitals for pain tolerance. You're telling them it's just a very linear scientific thing. Concentrate on this thing for a minute. And the idea is even more important than concentrating on that theme, because that's good for you, but it's, again, it's acting upon it. So I could tell a 5-year-old, any time that you treat another kid in a way that makes you and or that other child not feel happiness, it's probably going to come around, you know, and get you in the end. It's probably not going to be a good thing. Somehow it'll make you feel not happy. It may be tomorrow or the next day, but if you take happiness from yourself or others, then you're not going to have it. It could be today, it could be tomorrow, but you'll lack it at some point. But the good news is, every time you do something that helps you feel happiness, true happiness, and others feel happiness as well, you're going to get rewarded for that. It's good karma. You know, any terminology that would fit, but it's going to come back to you. You're going to get more of that. So I would just use languaging that fits any particular person.
Great. That's wonderful. Well, we're getting close to the end of our time, so I want to mention again that the website where you can find out more about Dr. Michael Mehrdad is www.grailproductions.com. His itinerary is there, so it doesn't matter where you are on the planet. You can see if he's coming near you. He's going to be in the Richmond area this coming weekend, so we hope that anybody within a 50 to 100-mile radius can come on in there, and even further if you're willing to drive, and it sounds like it would definitely be worth the ride. So please do come on and visit him. If you have not joined us, become a friend with us on the Blog Talk side of the Honoring Hour, please do so. We're also on Facebook. And I found Dr. Michael Mehrdad today because a friend on Facebook who I really don't know personally said, hey, would you like to have this person on your show? And I have to say, you know, Michael, thank you so much because you've done this has been a wonderful show. I loved having you on here. I loved the topic, and I love the wisdom that you've shared with us.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me on, as I said. Appreciate it all.
Absolutely, absolutely. So please do go to our main website, which is www.thehonoringhour.com, and find us there. Also, check out the website. Remember that we have coming up on the 4th, we have Elka Vera that's going to be talking to us about how to utilize the energies of spring and bring out the possibilities within us. And Paul Wong on the 18th, who is going to be doing some healing with Chinese energetics. Dr. Mehrdad, is there anything else you want to share with us or say to us before the show completely ends?
Well, something I'll say in a nutshell on the topic of intimacy is simply this. Incorporating everything else we talked about, if I were summarizing the ideals and the ideas and the behaviors of Tantra, sacred sexuality, which are really down to that final relationship with others, and one of the keys is, besides communication, is intimacy. Practice slowing down. Slow down your conversation. Connect more. Make more eye contact. Slow down. Slow down everything related to your relations and your intimacies. Don't get into hyper and speed up and hypersexual behaviors and think that that's the answer and all the fancy things you read in the magazines. Connect more. Slow down and try to feel every sensation. You know, aside from all the things you hear about Tantra and such, positions and how long we make love and whatever, it's mainly, that's all fancy, that's great. But without connection, it's nothing. Try to find connection in your conversations. Try to connect better in your meditations with God. Try to connect with yourself better in your own self-inventory. Connect with others in communication and in intimacy. So slow down the act of sex. Slow down and connect more in your conversations. Slow down and connect and feel everything going on physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And if you're not with somebody you can slow down with, you must find ways to create some sense of connecting deeper without being too intimidating for yourself.
I think that's wonderful information. I'd love to see the world slow down a little bit and just take more time for themselves. So great advice.
A lot of this is explained in one of my books, An Introduction to Tantra and Sacred Sexuality. A lot of that is explained in there about connecting and slowing down. It's just such a wonderful thing. And what's amazing is slowing down actually increases our senses and sensitivities. It's not so much technique and special booze anointments and gels you buy in the store. Those are neat for whomever. But slowing down is the best thing you can do for yourself.
Okay. And your books and everything are available through your website, grailproductions.com?
Yes, they are. Yeah, you can get most of them on Amazon or on my website.
Wonderful. Great. Well, thank you very much. I want to thank all of our listeners. We've had a lot of people in the chat room for joining us today, and we hope that you will join us again in a couple weeks. And, Michael, thank you so very much for being here today. It's been such a pleasure. I'm going to sign off by just going ahead and playing Silk by Chris James so that we can listen to that beautiful music. Thanks for joining us.
Oh.